Matt, we should have had you on for this episode. The more I think about it, the more I think this would be very interesting with you.
If you want to, fine. I don't mean that in a negative way. I don't got anything else going on. I'm just sitting here vaping.
Should I make a podcast, Ellie?
Yeah, let's make a podcast. Hello, and welcome into another episode of Gifted Kid, Messy Adult, the show where potential went to die. I'm your host, Ellie Michaels. I use she, her.
I'm your host, Jessica Michaels, and I use she, they. We'll go she today. Be a little she-y.
Cool. And joining us for this very special episode is producer Matt. And you know what, Matt? We never check your pronouns. You just
he, him.
White guy?
Just he, him. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I know, but, you know.
It doesn't seem like the most important thing in the world to you.
Whatever pronouns you want to be called, I'm completely cool with that. It's just not a something I guess I identify. Here we go. I just want this explained to me. I understand he, him. I understand she, her. I don't think I understand they, them.
Oh, you know what? That's a good, we haven't talked about that. So that's actually probably a good thing to define. So I think, not identifying as a they, them, I will be talking from just what I know about from other people. But they, them, I know, is used by people who do not feel tied to either a male gender in particular or a female gender in particular. So they're kind of out of the binary. They identify either as something else or as nothing, really, as just a person, totally detached from gender at all. And then just about anything in between as well. Ellie, does that line up with your understanding?
Yeah. I think the one thing that I actually referred to a non-binary friend of mine as an NB at one point, which is like short for like NB, as in like non-binary. And they actually said that they don't really like that term because it feels like we've turned the gender binary into a gender trinary, where there's mask, femme, and then the other. And they're like, I don't fit into any of those. None of those feel comfortable. So it's just a third secret thing. My therapist is non-binary. I think they're actually trans mask, but they wear, you know, earrings on dates. They feel like wearing earrings. They kind of got a beard sometimes. They'll have, you know, bright pink hair sometimes, or like dark black hair sometimes. It's really just how you're feeling that day. And in general, yeah, it's just people who don't feel particularly comfortable or drawn to either an explicitly mask or explicitly femme identity. So it's Coke or Pepsi, water.
Okay. Because I was always wondering, is it a, and again, I'm playing mainstream audience here that may not understand these terms. But again, this is my personal question too. Because I didn't look into it at all, but from my understanding, or what I thought, I assumed prior to this discussion we're having now, was that it was almost like a gender norms type of thing. You know, like I like to cook. I don't like building things out of wood. I like to garden. I don't like building things from wood.
That's how detached any of us are from like a traditional mask identities. We can't even think of anything else. Like what if like the stereotypical guys, what they like to build things. We know that.
Build things, watch football, and drink beer. I watch football. I can't drink. Mm-hmm. I like doing internet routering stuff. I put up a fan the other day. I mean, I don't know. Gender norms are weird to me because of where we're at in culture now. Mm-hmm. And because white dudes stop saying, women got to be like this.
They still say that a lot. And they also say that, you know, dudes got to be like this. And
those are weirdos.
I was never big in traditional gender roles at all. Like, our marriage was very much backwards as far as traditional stuff. I was the housemaker and Jess was the breadwinner. And even now, I had somebody call me Futch the other day, which is like femme butch. And I'm like, I'll do butch stuff, but only if I have to. And I'm going to complain the entire time. Like,
and your makeup will look fabulous. I prefer, like, while you do
I'm
it.
Lazy femme. Like, yeah, if I'm going out without makeup, it's because either I forgot or I am the sleepy tireds. But no, I don't really enjoy mask stuff, like, at all.
My relation to they, and the reason I do she, they, is because, like, my entire life, I always felt like there was some girl day that I missed, of, like, all of a sudden, girls were... they knew how to do their hair, and that was something that was very important, and do their makeup, and clothes were very important. And I never was compelled to do any of that. I not only was I not compelled to do it, when I occasionally tried, it was to disastrous effect. And it was not something I ever related to. And I felt like I didn't get an instruction manual, and I felt like that my whole life. But then when Ellie transitioned, I realized that, oh, there are people who take joy in dressing up and shoes and makeup and hair, like all of those things that not only did I not understand, but I only felt like compelled to do them if I really, really, really needed to for some reason. It was never something I enjoyed. It was always something that I was doing because I felt like I had to. I never got any enjoyment out of, and I never realized before that people could get joy from things just related to gender. And so that made me kind of step back and go, like, and I'm mentioning just kind of some surface level things. I don't think that being a woman at all is in any way related to just makeup and clothes and anything like that. Those are just the things that I saw kind of at first that made me go, like, oh, this difference goes beyond just what I've noticed, you know, like me not feeling attached to these things. It's that there's a whole part of this that I don't experience at all. That is very common among, like, my friends, you know, or the people I know would love to get together and drink wine and have girls' nights. And, like, girls' night sounds awful to me. I don't want a girls' night. You know, I don't want to do whatever, you know, drink wine and have a spa day and get manis and pedis, which just even sounds awful to me. The phrase manis and pedis is icky to me. And the types, but even like the types of relationship situations that I would have would be different than what I knew of from other people. Like, there really wasn't much for me to relate to from women. Now, it's not necessarily that there's a bunch of stuff to relate to from men either, but I mean, I do watch football. But I do often, I have more, I guess, typically male personality traits than female personality traits, which has always been something that's got me into trouble at work, because they expect women at work to be very nurturing, very mothering, not direct in the way that they talk. There's just this expectation of what women do. And I communicate more like you would expect a man to communicate in the workplace. I'm very direct, very much, you know, get to the point. Bottom line, I am more, you know, in certain situations, more aggressive. You know, I just, if you looked at kind of like how guys are typically in the workplace and how women typically are in the workplace, I do am more of like what the guys are like at work. So I just don't feel like I necessarily fit in anywhere in that particular, you know, conversation. But just by virtue of my entire life being a girl and being female, you know, and having that be my identity, I relate sometimes more to that. And I feel like, oh, you know, a little bit more feminine certain days, you know, and so that's kind of where I fall. Plus, you know, I've physically, there is not really much question about which gender I would be, I think, from, you know, from an outside perspective. So that is part of it too. It's just kind of, yeah, it's just kind of easier. So I don't know. That's where I sort of fall on the she, they thing and why I pick those particular pronouns. Because I just don't feel really a part of anything.
Now I feel like I understand better. And this is the episode by this point.
This right? is what we're talking about.
Can yeah. I just point out that we were going to talk about pathological demand avoidance, but none of us want to, so we're doing something else.
I don't even know what that is, and that's why you brought me. That's why y'all brought me on.
We are going to do PDA at pathological demand avoidance, because that's the first thing most people have to learn is what that acronym means in terms of neurodiversity. And we'll have to have you on, Matt, but it won't be today's discussion. No, this is today's discussion. Clearly,
I feel like I'm sorry, Ellie. You go ahead.
Well, just to speak to like the not feeling particularly drawn to either one or whatever, like right after I started transitioning, I think even before I'd started on hormones, Jess, you got me like a padded bra and mm-hmm. I put that on and I put a shirt on. I went, oh, I'm shaped right. Okay. That's mm-hmm. neat. It's like something I didn't even know I wanted to be there, or something I didn't even know was bothering me mm-hmm. is now gone all of a sudden. And then like, I got a handful of, you know, nice strappy sundresses at the thrift store, and that made my freaking week. Like, it's so nice. I love them. They're all spinny and light and flowery and cute, and I feel really good about myself when I wear one. And at no point in my life before that did I put on a garment of clothing and go, ooh, yeah, this feels good. I think like maybe like a long black trench coat when I was like a sullen teenager, but that had unpleasant connotations. So that, none of which I was going for. I just walked a lot and my legs got cold. So,
like I was never, I was raised in a very scientific household. Like my father was one of the people that did the programming for the CAT scan machine. My grandfather mm-hmm. did stuff with like insurance and the help create the AARP. I live in this weird shadow of people that invented things, but I don't care. But growing up, like I was never, we were, gender wasn't like you're a boy, you're a girl, but like gender roles weren't typically a thing. Like my mom was a stay-at-home mom. My dad worked. That's just how it was. At this point, my wife works and I'm the kind of stay-at-home dad or whatever, but there was no importance on guys got to do this, girls got to do this, which I appreciate now because I feel like I have a better understanding. Like when Jess told me that Ellie came out as trans, I'm like, oh, cool. You know, like it's not a deal with for me, because to me there's two types of people: garbage people and people that are cool. Like I know that's very binary thought or whatever, but it doesn't matter like pronoun usage or who you are, as long as you don't suck.
Not all binaries are bad. I think, you know, that is just something isn't inherently bad just because it is a binary. But I think in nature there are very few binaries, and we find that more and more as we, you know, look at things with an open mind. I just remember animals always being defined by like relationship status in our old science books when I was when I was a kid. Like we were looking to have the binary like affirmed, you know, in nature. Mm-hmm. Like the mama goose does this and the daddy goose does this, and but then later we find out like, oh no, there are long-term same-sex partnerships all across, you know, nature. There are animals that will change their biological sex because of, you know, they need to reproduce or whatever. Like there's stuff that falls outside of the binary everywhere. We just didn't know it. And for a long time, I didn't know that it was an option either. I wasn't really a tomboy because I didn't like climbing trees, which is again like the limited understanding I have of young boys. I didn't like climbing trees, which to me is what I would have liked to do. But I didn't really like, all I did with Barbies was put them in a line.
Autistic, you say.
I know. It wasn't until a friend of ours who is, you know, goes by she, they, that I was able to recognize like, oh, this experience that I have is similar to something that other people experience. And this is kind of how they think about things. And that was like, that blew my mind, because that's the first time I felt like, that's me. Like, that is my experience. Because otherwise, I just felt wrong all the time, like for not wanting, you know, for just not being a part of something that clearly I was a part of. But it was all of a sudden, it was like, oh, the reason I don't feel like I'm a part of that group is because I'm not. That was huge. That was very big for me.
And it's a thing that people bring up of like, why are there so many terms, or why is it the, you know, the alphabet mafia of the LGBTQIA stuff? And it's like, well, for one, a lot of that comes from medical and psychological terminology that just really hasn't been popular long enough to have more easily accessible and colloquial terms. But also, labels are kind of important, because when you felt wrong or invalid for all of your life, and then all of a sudden you find out that there's a word for what you are, which means that you're not the only one, which means that you're not broken or weird or wrong. You're just a different version of the different types of humans there are. And it's representation matters. And it's always hilarious when people who talk about representation not mattering are very usually the ones who talk about not being able to enjoy something because the main protagonist does not look like them.
You want to hear my first story of me knowing representation matters?
Absolutely.
So I'm half Canadian. My mom's from Canada, from Ontario. Ellie just got this disgusted look on her face.
No, that was her interested look. That was not her disgusted look.
Thank you. That was not disgusted. That was, oh, I didn't know that.
That was resting, that was a little bit of autism face, is when she learns new information, her face, she forgets what her face is doing, and you know.
Remind me to go back and watch that video and see what that face looks like. Because, yeah, no, that was literally just, oh, I did not know that before. That's neat.
This is a learning episode for me, greatly. So
I'm sorry to everyone I've made that face at. Sorry to go on.
Yeah, don't apologize. It's, you did what you did. Whatever. There's no, like, I'm not saying no regrets, but like, there's no reason to be sorry. I've learned something new about Ellie. I have accepted it and moved forward. That's it. But I was reading X-Men comics, and when it first came out that Wolverine was from Canada, I was just like, oh, finally, a famous Canadian superhero. And so like, I took that into the back of my brain, and when things were coming out like Black Panther, and I saw how excited people were for Black Panther, which is an amazing movie, screw everybody that didn't say it was great. And I saw how excited people were for that movie. I'm like, I understand that feeling, because at one time I realized Wolverine was Canadian. And that continues to happen when you see trans representation, gay representation in media. I'm like, I understand that, because at one time there was no Canadian superheroes that I knew of. Which is such a weird, small, little, tiny box for a straight white male or whatever. But to me, it's like, I understand because I had that feeling. So I can relate in a very small way to something larger that's happening within culture.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, that's actually just a really, really good example, because that is just a little thing, and it was something that you didn't really realize bothered you until all of a sudden it didn't. And I also remember the massive, massive excitement. I think right after I saw Black Panther, I was listening to one of Kevin Smith's podcasts, and his co-host happened to be black. Colin Powell happens to be.
You're just quoting comedy bits. Was that George Carlin?
Daily Carlin drop. Yep. Yeah, Kevin Smith, you know, talked about the movie for a moment, and then he just passed it over to his co-host, who then just gushed for 40 minutes about like this was so amazing. It's, you know, especially given the African diaspora, the idea that we have this home, this place that is actually ours and like is advanced and is just and is fair and, you know, a place that we can call our own was just amazing to me because that just hasn't been a real thing. And the dude talked about seeing it in the theaters and then going home and then picking up his kid and going back to the theaters like, all right, son, you need to watch this. And the kid had the exact same reaction that like, there is a place for us. There is somewhere mm-hmm. I belong. And, you know, for trans folks, that's like Denver. Seriously, there's tons of us out here. And it's because we all come from like the plain states. Because if you live in like nowhere in Nebraska, the safest large community of people like you is here. And yeah, people, we need to belong. And especially neurodivergent people, we need to see behavior modeled for us to be able to understand it and do it. And being able to see someone who is you modeling that behavior and that way of living is really, really important, I think. And really, really affirming.
I've tried to explain trans to friends that aren't trans or don't have an understanding of it. Like one of my very, very close friends 2 years ago, she came out to me before anybody else. And I was like, oh, wow. Like I'm very touched that you came out to me first and was like, I don't want to say a tough pill to swallow, but a different pill to swallow trying to understand that. And I kind of thought about how I'm epileptic. 99% of the people that I know have never seen me seizure, but I am epileptic. So it's, to me, it was kind of like the idea that like Ellie, for you, you know, you're a woman, but no one got to see that until you started transitioning. Is that a fair mm-hmm. assumption, actually, or a fair comparison?
Yeah, well, I mean,
depression also, but I mean, for me, it was like epilepsy is the number, that's the one that takes just precedent over the depression for me.
I think the difference is that I didn't know until I was 34.
But so some people do.
Like, oh, yeah. Ellie came out, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, I didn't come out. I figured it out. And then within like an hour told everybody I talked to. It's like, hey guys, guess what? I figured it out. Yay. This is what's been wrong with
but
me.
But you knew there was something, right? Cause you've told me, Ellie, about being conscious of things like the way that you stood years and years before, like, you know, of it. So there was, maybe was there some type of something that you were kind of aware of potentially?
Let's go back to the best trans allegory ever made, which is The Matrix.
Yep.
Trans allegory made by two trans women who, after they made it, started transitioning. The speech that Morpheus gives Neo the first time they meet, when he talks about how there's always been something quite not quite right. There's always something wrong, a splinter in your mind. That always stuck with me very, very hard. And now I know why. Because there was a splinter in my mind that I couldn't figure out what it was because I didn't know what it was because no one told me it was an option. And then once I met and befriended a handful of trans folks because they're just neat, after a while that all clicked into place. And as we say, my egg broke. And yeah, it was a sense that something was wrong. And it was also a sense of like, my brain was kind of on fire all the time. And I now know that that's partially the dysphoria, which is the psychological effect of not being who you feel like you are or should be, but also just my straight up endocrine system doesn't run on testosterone. It like, it's putting diesel in a gas truck or, you know, it's just, it's going to run, but not well. And so like, smoking or drinking or drugs of any kind was just trying to tamp down that fire in my brain. And then HRT just put out that fire. So yeah, no, it's definitely something that's there your whole life, but you don't necessarily know what it is or why it is. And then you stumble across the answer.
I feel like if I, during this conversation, say anything that sounds ignorant or naive, or is just a bad comparison, I'm trying to learn as a human and understand.
No, we are.
What do you think? We're here to explain things?
Yeah.
Some kind of discussion?
Someone will explain to me.
Because I mean, like, we've both been in a place of needing education too. That doesn't stop. So we're not judgmental when people are trying to learn what they ask or what they say, because that is part of the process. Like I have said just about every and asked every ignorant, you know, thing or question along Ellie's journey as possible. And Ellie's had to adjust some, like, I mean, we both had to adjust language and adjust the way we think and what we understand about people's experience. So just because you have this particular thing apply to you doesn't grant you all this knowledge and certainly doesn't grant you the ability to talk about it without getting something wrong or offending someone, because you just don't know about what things mean to other people. So, you know, it's when Ellie came out, when Ellie started transition, there's so many things that I look back, I'm like, oh, that was a very silly opinion for me to hold at that time because I didn't know. Now I know what I do. And there's a lot of things I look at very, very differently. No, that's totally fine. And we will gently correct and inform, but never, never judge.
Also, don't walk up to a random trans woman you see somewhere and ask these questions. I'm going to flat out come out and say that.
It's not our job to educate you. No. And
well, on this show it is.
Oh yeah, no.
We've chosen.
In general.
We have chosen this role, but yes, don't. I know some very well-meaning people. It's like, I feel like it's the same people who would be likely to walk up to a black woman and ask to touch her hair.
That was exactly where I was going to go with it.
Don't do those things. Even if people have been nice to you in the past when you have done that, don't do them. Because people are not there for you to, they're not museum exhibits for you to learn from. Do not need to be educators at every moment, or if somebody gives you some knowledge, or you know, then be thankful and gracious, but that's not anybody's responsibility, and not everybody wants to do it or likes doing it, because it is tough to be the teacher all the time. It's exhausting, and you know, it's not a role that everybody enjoys. And even people that do, they don't enjoy it all the time.
Yeah. I would say this situation is different because this is a podcast trying to educate people.
And also, this is unique.
I would assume Ellie feels comfortable with me asking these questions to her because we've known each other for a while, even though this is a very public forum.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But I mean, there's also the part where like, as you start going through this process and as transition happens, a whole lot of crazy stuff happens and you really want to talk about it like all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have to wear more sunscreen now because there's less pigment in my skin and the skin is thinner. And so it's more susceptible to getting burned. Like what? You know, estrogen saps the keratin out of your nails. So all of a sudden your nails are important, but they're also really weak and will like chip. And you find out like, oh, a broken nail. Haha, that's like a joke. Like, no, a broken nail can travel all the way up your freaking fingernail up into like the, that face. That face, exactly.
Oh.
It sucks.
Mm-hmm. The temperature thing?
I'm cold all the time. My skin produces less oil, so it's more comfortable for me to have long hair. The shape of my face shifted, my hips rotated, so I walk a little bit differently. That's part of why it's easier for AFAB, assigned female at birth, people to cross their legs more closely. It's because the angle of their hips and how their legs sit is slightly different. So it's my feet shrank. I went down 2 shoe sizes and I'm 2 inches shorter. Like all kinds of crazy stuff happens. And you want to tell everybody about it, but it's also not, you know, polite conversation to be like, I can't open jars because I have boobs now. Like,
I just got to this party. Can someone help me open this bottle of wine? My arms aren't as strong anymore.
No, they're not. And the jar thing is actually because that's all torque and pectoral strength, mm-hmm. and almost immediately your pecs dissolve because there's going to be boobs there. So within like a couple weeks of starting HRT, people are like, I can't open jars. And like, get yourself one of those tool things that attaches to the bottom of the cabinet. You're going to need it.
That's a good new bumper sticker. It's just, I can't open jars.
Oh, it's really interesting. And it's funny because the things that are most important to us in our lives as we navigate this are the least important things to other people. And the things that other people think are the most significant really are not, you know, when it comes to our life and the stuff we deal with day to day. So, you know, the stuff people are very interested to talk about, some, you know, adult activities perhaps, is the most common question I get, and people will do it when Ellie's not there, which is hilarious to me. She will walk slightly away and people will pull me to the side, get real quiet, and ask me like about like, do you about whatever it is that they think is totally representative of the trans experience. And that is a part of life, obviously, but it's not necessarily any more significant a part of our lives than it is for anyone, because you have a whole life experience and a whole existence and a whole person. And this really does affect just about everything kind of in equal measure with where you would find them in the other parts of your life, I think. So even just having this discussion is important because of what we're not talking about, I think, because people see transition or as just a matter of anatomy. And that is so not it. That is so not the point. But that's often the only place that people want to go, or place that people feel like is the thing that is most important.
Anatomy is secondary, honestly. Like, starting on hormones is first and foremost a psychological thing. That's why, you know, untreated dysphoria ends the life of 41% of trans people. Just because your brain doesn't work right if your endocrine system doesn't work right. So as soon as I got on hormones, my emotional range expanded drastically. Food tastes better. Colors are more beautiful and have like emotional impact. My misophonia is just about gone. Things don't just hurt because they're a noise anymore. I sleep better. I am happier than I was biochemically capable of being for the first 34 years of my life. The worst day as me now is better than the best day of me before. And the fact that it comes along with the side effects of the physiological changes is just kind of a nice bonus. Like, I would be okay with still looking like I did before. I'm happy I look like this now, except for dudes are always looking for more excuses to talk to me, which is weird. But yeah, no, it's got so much more to do with your heart and your mind than it has to do with the shape of your chest. And the outward stuff is what people see. And, you know, the adult intimate stuff is what they wonder about. But that's because of the very limited definition that our society has for said adult intimate stuff.
Now I'm thinking about people thinking about the intimate. I'm like, why does that, for some people, why is that the first place their mind goes to is they're trans?
Well, I think part of it is so much of our discussion about trans people has come from bathroom bills, which are very much about, you know, very much when it comes down to it, about anatomy. And so that leads to surgery. And to so many people, that is the thing that makes you able to go in one bathroom or the other bathroom. It's all about this binary just being reinforced and reinforced and reinforced. It doesn't take a lot of knowledge to understand how little that really is to a lot of people, like in the grand scheme of things, and how that is far from the only part of the experience. But that's the part of the experience that people you know, but also part of it is, I think, like your Canada story, that's what people relate to. You know, that's the part of the experience that they can go, oh, this is how this would affect my life, because this is something I experienced. So how do you deal with that? This other stuff they don't even know about. So some of it is just lack of knowledge, and it's where they feel like they connect to the subject. But others of it is just, it's just the way that the issue has been presented to society and in what context for years and years and years. And also religion. You know, religion has had a lot to do with it. And, you know, these clearly defined roles for men and for women and, you know, things that are ordained by God and or, you know, people who are theoretically is representative. And that is foundational for people. A lot of that people start getting that when they're children. So it's just been the way that they've heard and understood things for their entire life. And they have very strong beliefs about that. So it is, in a way, there's some instances in which it's understandable to me that that's what people want to know about. But when you inform people that that is not that is not really what the focus should be, some people take that and want to learn more. Other people, for them, that is the whole issue, frankly. And you are what you are, and this is the way it is defined and the way it is decided, and that's the end of the discussion for them.
Two things. One, my favorite is when super Christian women try to talk down or demand that trans women do something, because it's like, well, if we're going by your super religious definition, I'm still a man and you're still a woman, so how dare you speak to me or give me commands? Get in your place. Like, by your own rules, you can't do this. And then the other part is that the bathroom bill stuff is blood libel. Like, in the 30s, in, you know, Germany and whatnot, the massive anti-Semitism story was, lots of analogous stuff with QAnon, the story was that Jews would kidnap children and take them to the woods and drink their blood for Jewish mystical rites. Like, this was a story that was commonly told and commonly believed. And the idea that trans people do anything to anyone in a bathroom other than maybe compliment their hair is that same thing. Plus, one of the first things that happens on estrogen is that your stuff starts to shrink and doesn't work as great. So that's not going to work too well to, you know, harm someone in a bathroom. And we go to the bathrooms that match what our presentation is, because otherwise it weirds people out. So a trans mask person who was assigned female at birth and is on testosterone, has a big bushy beard, but still has assigned female at birth bits, doesn't want to walk into the women's room because it weirds people out.
Yeah, the law or policy says that that's where they should go. That is, you know, by adhering to the law, they would be appearing to violate it. It's so much more nuanced than people think it is. And it's the bathroom. Bathrooms are gross. Like, nobody wants to spend any more time in there than they need to do what needs to be accomplished and go, you know, like it frustrates
also,
me.
Women's rooms, somehow worse than men's rooms. I don't know how or why, but Jesus.
Women are gross.
Come on.
Women are gross. What are we doing? I got to be honest. Yeah. Women's rooms get foul. They're gross.
Yeah. No. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. Yeah.
I was going to go back to the point where we briefly talked about, I briefly said, like, I don't understand why when people meet someone that is trans, their mind goes immediately to private parts or whatever. Because I remember, Jess, when I first talked to you about doing this show, and you said that Ellie is trans and transitioning, I think my first like text back to you was, I can't wait to meet the real Ellie. Because I remember when my friend Sarah came out, who I'd known for like 10 years prior, she, after came out, seemed much happier. Her personality was larger. Just seemed like a more fun person to be around. So I understand that idea that, like, and again, I am stepping all over Ellie's experience, but I'm trying to take it from my perspective, but that you've been in a shell and now you're free of that shell. and you get to be you. That's my understanding.
That's literally the term we use. Somebody who's trans but doesn't quite know it or hasn't quite accepted it yet is called an egg. And after a while, their egg will break. They'll figure out who they are, and they will come out of it, and they will hatch, and they will be a beautiful whatever. Mm-hmm. And there's also a thing called the egg prime directive, where if you know that somebody is trans and they don't, you don't say anything about it, because the last thing that they need is an external voice saying that they're trans, because that's something they'll push against. And so you don't interfere. It's, you know, the Star Trek prime directive, sub-warp, non-warp capable species, just you don't talk to them. But as soon as they pass that warp threshold, they're going to start meeting the neighbors. So we might as well come and introduce ourselves. Mm-hmm. So like when I realized and came out, a friend of mine won a bet that she'd had for 7 months, and we'd known each other for 9 months. She lives in London. We had only ever emailed. Because you can just tell. I think part of it, and the private parts thing, is also almost in like a Freudian way, it's one of the massive telltales of transness being valid, because cis men straight up have like castration anxiety, I think was the Freudian term. And the reason that my friend found out or figured out that I was trans is that I got a vasectomy, and I was joking about it. And I had absolutely no qualms or hesitations about getting a vasectomy. Like, oh yeah, of course. I don't want kids, and this is easy and generally irreversible, and great, let's go do this. It'll take 5 minutes. And I was joking about it the entire time. I even made the joke like, hey, can we just clear everything off and I can be a bit more aerodynamic? And that was a joke at the time. And now I'm like, actually, can I pay thousands of dollars to clear that all out and make it more aerodynamic? That's not a joke that cis dudes make. That's not something that are even comfortable thinking about, let alone pretending jokingly to want.
People also view that as a litmus test, because there's an idea that, first of all, you can choose to be trans or not, and that it's just something, maybe you have a feeling one day and it'll pass, you know, which, you know, both of those things are erroneous. But the idea, you know, that some people have is if you will commit to having surgery, that's how we know you're really a woman or really a man, is because they just don't think that being trans is an identity, you know, that people have, or that it's just something people do willy-nilly, like that just, oh, I'm gonna be, you know, I'm gonna be a man for the next 6 days or whatever, and they think that people wouldn't have surgery unless they really, you know, that's how you know they really meant it, which is just such a ridiculous concept. But that's what people kind of hold up to. Oh, if you were really trans, you would have surgery. But for so many reasons, that is untrue, or not always true. You know, it's just another barrier that people like to put in front of, because they don't think that something is real. They need it proven to them, which is silly.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I shot an interview with my electrolysis tech this last weekend, because she keeps getting new clients not knowing what electrolysis is. And people keep thinking it's like laser hair removal, and it's not. And so the point of these videos was to give new clients an idea of what to expect and what's expected of them and how to get ready for this. And the reason that I know this electrolysis tech is because laser hair removal only works on dark hairs. And I have a lot of really fine white hairs, but they're still there. And I still don't like how they feel. They're on my chin and elsewhere. And to get bottom surgery, as it's commonly said, you need to have all of the hair on your junk removed. And it needs to be by electrolysis, where one at a time, they poke a little wire into the hair follicle, zap it with electricity, and then pluck that hair. One at a time, every single hair on and around your tackle. So if you're willing to do that, which is thousands of dollars and months of work,
and incredibly painful, like just in case people are under the illusion that this is not painful, it is painful for sure.
Oh, it's astonishingly painful, and it's slow, and you have to sit there very still the whole time, sometimes with your legs in a weird position. So it's very much a thing. And even she talked about working for a salon in town that I've already butted heads with because they sold anti-vaxxer books in the front of their shop. Yeah, that face. That's the face I made. Part of why it's very, very important to get those hairs removed before bottom surgery is because your outie is all of a sudden going to be an innie. And if there's any hairs left growing, that is now inside of you. And there's just about nothing you can do about it, but it's going to hurt, it's going to be infected, it's going to be inflamed, and that might just be the rest of your life. And so you have to be 100% super, super certain. And this woman at this other salon that she was working with, who's actually a doctor, said, oh, that's not a thing, that's trans propaganda. What? Okay, first of all, here's 25 medical studies that say that that's a thing. And second, trans propaganda, there's like 2 million of us in the country. Who's paying for this propaganda? Like, what? Our propaganda is, hey, quit killing us. Like, that's the whole trans agenda.
I just want to go to the grocery store. I just need to pick up a prescription.
I have to pee. I had a big coffee. Like, the most mischievous thing I've ever done in a bathroom is I got some of those stickers that say, like, clap to activate. Like, I got them for free from, like, an order of stickers I got for my company, and I put one on the towel dispenser thing in Home Depot. Like, That's it. You go use the bathroom, you wash your hands, you try not to drop your phone in the toilet. It's the entirety of the experience.
Propaganda.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, the trans agenda is just your to-do list. Like, walk the dog. Do the dishes, fold laundry. Like, it's not, people just want to live their lives. We just want to live our lives quietly and safely, like anybody else wants to.
Also, we're autistic. We really want to be left alone.
Is that something within the entire trans community is autism, though? Or is that just something with broad strokes?
I meant me and Jess specifically.
Oh, okay.
But there's anecdotally a solid 70% overlap of neurodivergent and genderqueer of some kind. And in my experience, those last 30% are just people who are so autistic, they don't care about gender at all and will just roll with whatever they were assigned at birth because that's the one they know how to do.
Yeah.
Kind of like what Jess always did.
The science is, you know, there are some studies that show a correlation. But what you find is that as you talk to more members of both communities, you start often to realize that they're the same community, and you start to see more. So a lot of us, even though the science isn't that strong necessarily, just from our experience in working with, you know, I work with Ellie and I sort of are perfect examples. I worked with neurodivergent people and I worked with neurodivergent people for a long time and a lot of them. And I was like, boy, a lot of these folks are part of the LGBTQIA+, you know, the alphabet mafia, as we say. And Ellie at the same time was working with a lot of trans people and genderqueer people and realized sort of independently of that, hey, a lot of these people are neurodivergent. So all of a sudden we sort of realized that our circles were overlapping. That wasn't something we set out to learn or set out to know. It was just something organically we discovered kind of over the years that, oh, wow, there's something here. So, and then there is some science, but like with any science, there's not a lot studying, frankly, neurodiversity or, you know, or any of the gender issues. So, you know, there's not a lot of super strong data that says one way or the other, but.
Not yet.
Like, hey, babe, I keep finding peanut butter in my chocolate. Do you keep finding chocolate in your peanut butter? Yes. Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Okay. I think there's something. Then we get my most favorite term, which is neuroqueer.
Neuroqueer.
Which is like, there's something going on a couple of levels, and like we don't really know what it is, and it doesn't really matter. But I think there's really not a lot of science because we haven't, as a subcategory of humans, we haven't thrived a lot. And in a lot of cases, it has not been safe to be ourselves publicly. You know, the saying that the the Nazis came for the journalists first. Like, eh, they came for the trans people first.
And all the studies?
Yeah, that one specific black and white photo of the big pile of books burning in the middle of the street, that was literally the trans museum. Mm-hmm. It was this one place where there's all of this documentation and history and stuff. I mean, talking back to, like, there's a particular Greek goddess whose priests were only allowed to be non-binary people. So we've always been around. It's always been a thing. But just the documentation kind of got destroyed in the late 30s somehow.
Well, and there's the same with neurodiversity, with autism. I mean, you think of eugenics, the eugenics movement, exactly. Autism specifically is something that, you know, that was to be bred out of the population. Mm-hmm. So definitely to a lesser degree, I think in terms of physical violence,
sterilization is still physical violence. Oh, like, yeah.
That's true. The sterilization for sure of imbeciles, quote unquote, you know, so there have been societally, there's an acceptance issue and a perception, you know, that these are not populations that need to be looked at unless it is how to prevent them. You know, there's lots of reasons why I think there isn't a lot of science. I mean, and then women, medical studies are traditionally done on men and then the results applied to women. But there are not a lot of medical studies on women, certainly not on pregnant women. And then so when you add the fact that there are trans women on top of that, you have marginalized population on top of marginalized population. There's going to be even less science done, unfortunately.
Yeah. And as that compounds, the instances of violence against trans women is terrible. But add in then trans women of color, and it's astonishingly bad. You tended not to see trans people around very much because we tended to get killed in the parking lot with a brick. That doesn't happen quite so much nowadays. And now we're showing up. We're an appreciable percentage of the people you know, and you just didn't know it. Because maybe we didn't know it. But just like being with neurodivergent, being genderqueer is now just one of these options that we're aware that we can have and we can act like and we can be comfortably. So it's just something that we're all learning and something that we've all got to learn. Because it's like being left-handed or needing glasses. It's just one of the flavors of human that humans come in.
You just described me, left-handed and glasses.
See? Well, you're clearly disabled. But no one looks at someone with glasses and says, you're disabled. You can't function. They go, oh, you need glasses. Okay. Technically, bad sight is a disability, but we don't see it as that. We don't treat it as that because it's so easily treatable and it's so publicly accepted.
Now, let me take the ruler out and hit myself until I no longer am left-handed.
Yeah. Yeah, kids are turning trans at the same rate that they turned left-handed once that stopped being beaten out of them.
Well, fortunately, since your eyesight is bad, you were missing your hand the whole time. So it didn't really, never really took.
All right, I think we should end it on that last joke. So this was like an overall positive experience.
And a complete diversion of where we were going to go with the episode.
Hey.
Jess said that she wanted me to talk about pathological demand avoidance, and so I couldn't. That's it.
I do want, Matt, the next time you can record, I want the pathological demand avoidance episode to be with you. Because okay. I think you will really find it interesting. And I think it'll be a fun conversation with the three of us. So
most likely. It's whenever. Always fun with all three of us.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you for letting me play John Everyman and asking questions number 60% of questions I truly cared about and 40% that were, this is the general thing for the audience that they need to know.
You were an excellent audience surrogate and we thank you for making the sacrifice.
Oh no, I hit too many buttons on my soundboard.
Oh, all right. I'm going to go take a nap for like 4 hours now.
Plugs.
Oh, plugs. We got to end the episode.
Producer Matt's here. Plug your things.
I forgot to end the episode.
Everybody stop talking so I can say the thing. Well, I think that'll just about wrap it up for this incredibly long and interesting episode of Gifted Kid, Messy Adult. If you would like to support our work, you can find us, rate us, review us, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and YouTube. If you could leave a comment and hit that bell on YouTube. That'd be extra helpful. If you'd like to contact us to maybe be a future guest or with some ideas for a future topic, you can find us at giftedkidmessyadult@gmail.com. And Jess, where can people find you?
CoachJessicaMichaels.com. And you can find information about our wonderful neurodiverse professionals community, which is free to join and a great resource for neurodivergents that are trying to make their way working.
And if you'd like to get some commercial video work done, you can find me at LEMichaelsProductions.com. If you'd like to support the show financially and get some fun bonus content and support our ongoing work for the neurodivergent community, you can find us on Patreon at Coach Jessica Michaels, where you'll get some fun bonus content, including behind the scenes look at our ridiculous attempts at recording coherent things and discussions between myself and Jess on just about anything or something that seems interesting that week. Producer Matt, where can people find you?
Patreon.com/ I'm Matt Elfring. I have a show called Casual Yelling where I interview people that are interesting me most of the time. They are friends. Ellie and Jess will be on at some point. Patreon stuff has weird videos that I do with people like 2K Games or comedians where I make up fake wrestlers. I'm also on Substack. I'm Matt Elfring.substack.com where I just do free writing and kind of write editorials. My first one's about how I'm a hypocrite for leaving Substack and coming back to it.
I love it. I love it.
Fantastic. All right. Well, until next time, take care of each other out there.
Bye.